you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
It's Thursday, April 25th, and your Ben Jarofsky Show starts now. Your last chance, get those tickets for Best of Chicago happening tonight at the Lincoln Park Zoo. Those are only available at chicagoreader.com. Now on for the show today, Ben welcomes from Illinois' 3rd Congressional District, Congresswoman Delia Ramirez. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, if you want to stay up on politics, news, art, everything happening in the city of Chicago, you need to be at ChicagoReader.com. And if you want to follow Ben on Instagram, that's easy. It's at Benny J Show. Now here he is, the man himself, Ben Jarofsky.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Green Thursday, and here's why. I got the great Delia Ramirez, Congresswoman Delia Ramirez, right here waiting to have a conversation with me about housing bills that she proposed, votes she's taken in Congress, the future of Speaker Johnson, and anything else that pops into her mind. But before I do that, I just got to share this, folks. Right before I started to do this interview, I got a solicitation email from Marjorie Taylor Greene, Congresswoman from Georgia. And Congresswoman, just so you know, I get all kinds of solicitations from right-wingers. It's because I never say, trust me when I tell you. It's not that I give money to them. I just never knock them off. Just get them. I see what they're up to, Delia. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So here we go. This is the headline. This is chaos for Marjorie Taylor Greene. And friend, Speaker Mike Johnson has handed the speaker's gavel over to Chuck Schumer. All right, we'll just end it right there. I mean, I think she's speaking metaphorically. I don't believe that even Marjorie Taylor Greene thinks that Chuck Schumer is gavel in hand running the Congress. But she's really mad at Mike Johnson because he pushed for more funding for Ukraine and he refused to take this is her email, to force Schumer to hold a trial to impeach Mayorkas, or demanding that Joe Biden sign HR2 to secure our border. And she closes, I'm calling on all America First patriots to join me in this fight, to become my citizen co-sponsor for a motion to vacate so I can show the Congress that American people are behind me. So she's not really, I guess she's trying to drum up support for her movement to oust Speaker Mike Johnson. And that
she's trying to raise money, Ben. That's what she's trying to do.
Yeah, you know what? Delia Ramirez may be a lot younger than me, but she's been around the block a few times. She saw through that one. She's trying to raise money, but it also raises the possibility, Congresswoman. I'm really trying to call you Congresswoman. I've known you for a long time, and you always Delia, but I'm really trying to call you Congresswoman just out of respect for your office. But it also shows that there may be a vote to vacate, and that raises the issue of what the Democrats will do. Anyway, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show. It's nice to see you. It's nice that you're in town. And you're here for a very particular reason. And I told your assistant, Levi Todd, I said, Levi, we're going to discuss a few of the local some of the bills that she's championing. We're going to get down and dirty onto what's going on in Congress. So let's start with the press conference you held on Tuesday to discuss housing initiative. That's a pretty important housing initiative, considering, Delia, nothing's changed in the city of Chicago since you went to Congress. We have a housing crisis. The CHA seems incapable of using the sites it has to house people. There's opposition in the city council to almost any initiative that Brandon Johnson comes up with to deal with the so-called migrant crisis. Bring Chicago Home just went down to defeat, where they were going to raise money through a one-time tax on the sale of real estate to build housing, affordable housing. As you can see, it's kind of Well, it's kind of tumultuous times, to put it mildly, for housing in the city of Chicago right now. What are you proposing? Go ahead.
I mean, look, I think that if ever before we needed to have bold policy actions to be able to have a progressive vision around affordable housing, sustainable housing, and to make sure that it is created for tenants by tenants, we got to figure out how do we connect climate justice and housing justice. And really, that's the only way we're going to be able to achieve future of housing. So I just recently introduced the Green New Deal for Public Housing Act and the Tenants' Right to Organize. These are two groundbreaking pieces of legislation, Ben, that would actually advance a bold new approach that incorporates climate change and housing affordability. And as I think about where we are right now, over 293,000 housing units deficit in the state of Illinois. Rents have gone up 20% every year since the pandemic started. I mean, in some cases around the country, we are seeing people pay 70% more in rent today than they did in 2020. We have to make sure that Congress starts prioritizing housing. And the Green New Deal for Public Housing, it's a bill that would actually help begin putting together the resources necessary to also transform public housing into housing that is energy efficient, that is resilient, that really connects climate justice and housing. And it's really $167 billion over 10 years to transform public housing. So that's what the Green New Deal for Public Housing would be doing. The second one, it's about, and actually, let me tell you a little bit more about the Green New Deal for Public Housing, because it actually, while it transitions the entire public housing stock in the United States to zero carbon, highly energy efficient developments, it also invests in the creation of new good paying jobs in clean energy future. I mean, think about it. Why can't people afford their housing? The rent is too damn high. Houses are going from that were $300,000 for $800,000. And three, the jobs that people have, they'd have to have 2.5 full-time jobs to be able to purchase a home now or rent a two-bedroom house. So this also creates good local jobs in the clean energy industry. It lowers the bills for families. I mean, look, if we would electrify, we would make public housing all go electric. And I know the city is looking at some of this right now. It would mean that tenants would be paying 60% less in the utility bills because the cost, right, would actually significantly lower because now you've shifted to electric. So it's a great bill. I actually introduced it with Senator Bernie Sanders. You may know him. You've heard of him. And also my colleague and friend, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So it's a bill that I'm co-leading with the two of them. So anyway, I don't know if you have any questions on that bill, but I have a bunch of questions, thoughts.
And so why is it, help me out here, that only the initiatives that would assist either in the cost of housing or in the case of climate change and the fight against global warming, why is it only comes from Democrats? Mm-hmm. And this is an important point, I think, for you to address, because so many people come on my show these days. They go, well, I'm not going to vote for Joe Biden, or I may just drop out of running for the Democratic Party. And they have a lot of they're very upset about the embracing of Netanyahu. We'll get into the Israeli vote in a little while, or his comments about Gaza, et cetera, and so forth. And it seems as like they've lost connection to everything else that exists in the universe right now in politics. Yeah. So why is it that initiatives like this only come from Democrats, can only pass by Democratic votes? Because I do not believe, correct me if I'm wrong, you'll get one Republican to support you on either initiative. Go ahead.
I mean, look, we are living in one of the most divided Congresses that many of my colleagues who've been there for 20, 30, 40 years, they said they have seen their own lifetime. It is hypocritical. And it's also crazy, Ben, because to your point, when people are knocking on doors in red states and blue states and progressive states and liberal states and certainly in moderate districts, housing is now one of the top three issues. If it's not the very first issue, like in my district and in many districts in the state of Illinois, it's either number two, maybe three, but it's usually one or two. And people are saying inflation hasn't gone down. They're complaining about grocery costs. They're complaining about gasoline prices. They're complaining about how everything's so damn expensive. But if you think about that, Ben, inflation is tied to housing cost. It's actually 70% of inflation is related to housing costs. So Republicans in Texas or Republicans in downstate Illinois should care about housing. And let me also say that there are Republican tenants in public housing units. So if you're telling me that you don't believe that your constituents, red, blue, green, whatever they are, don't deserve to have high quality, energy efficient, affordable housing that we're already investing in anyway, then really shame on your hypocritical self who tries to say, oh, my rent is so expensive in DC and I'm a member of Congress. It's bullshit to me. Sorry. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. But it is what it is, because they don't care about their constituents. So don't go complaining about your own costs. So I say that to you to say there are a few of my colleagues that I am hoping care more about delivering. And once we're in a majority again, may vote for it. And I'm actually been talking about a few of the freshmen that I've been talking to. Been talking to them about immigration. I've been talking to them about housing that may jump on, but it will be maybe at the expense of their own careers, which is a shame.
Wait, so just to make I understand what you're saying, when you say you're talking to a few of your colleagues, are you talking about Republican?
There's a few of my Republican colleagues that would say to you, I am sick and tired of the same old thing here. It's dysfunction after dysfunction, motion to vacate, it's censures, it's trying to impeach secretaries here, impeach that person, impeach this person because you wore a shirt that I didn't like. And my constituents are asking me, why the hell haven't you made housing more affordable? Why are you spending money and sending money in other places and I don't have access to healthcare? And some of these Republican leaders that I'm talking about are mostly freshman members that are saying, I can't tolerate this anymore. And I'm going to start voting with Democrats. It may not be in the next week or two, but I think you're going to see that folks, that there are a few of them that are also reaching that sick and tired and their own reputations on the line. And they've said to me, I got to go back to that district, congressman or not. I got to go back there. So even if it means I may not come back, I'm really tired of being told you can't vote for something that would give a Democratic win, especially because this is not about a Democratic win. Like things like housing, work permits to fill jobs, it's not a Republican or Democrat thing. It's a good thing for constituents in every single part of the state and country.
Well, the label of the bill having to do with weatherizing public housing, it says New Green Deal. And that has been so demonized.
Yeah. I know.
By the Republican Party. This goes before you came to Congress. The New Green Deal.
Yeah.
So I don't know how it's a completely worthwhile idea you have. How can you sort of undo that demonization right now?
Well, look, I would be naive to tell you that I expect that the Green New Deal for public housing bill is going to pass this Congress. I am, however, saying to you that we have an emergency housing crisis in this moment, and it doesn't matter race, and it doesn't matter gender, and it certainly doesn't matter your party. And so we have some work to do across the country to make housing a top priority. And even if it doesn't pass this Congress, it is our responsibility over the next 7-8 months to get every single Democrat, because yes, Democrats generally are the ones that are introducing this legislation, but this legislation hasn't passed under Democratic leadership either. So we do need to make sure that we get everyone on board. And here's the other thing, Ben, that I think it's mind-boggling to me. We are responsible. We're fiduciary. We are responsible for the fiduciary mastering and managing of finances for our constituents, right? So if we are responsible for these budgets and making sure that we are not overspending and the things that and the Republicans love to talk about, wouldn't it be good for us to say that the things that we're putting money into are becoming highly energy efficient developments that actually lower the cost of housing, not increase it? So, I mean, it's a good thing. It's a win-win thing for me, Ben. So look, I don't pretend to tell you that I'd be shocked and probably would make national news if you had a Republican co-lead on this bill. But I definitely would say to you that there are a number of them that we're talking to that at the point that it actually comes to the House floor, we would hope that at least one or two of them would vote for it.
Okay. So just so everybody understands, for the record, I'm not looking for a Republican co-lead on the bill. Okay. I'm looking for a Republican vote for the bill.
That's right.
Right now, the Republican Party has dedicated itself to the notion that climate change is a hoax and that any effort to deal with climate change is part of some nefarious, I don't know, collusion between leftist radicals and the Chinese government. So they've lost their freaking minds, Delia. I see it on this. We're just talking about one aspect. OK, I could go across the board on every single issue. We could talk about the border all day. They wouldn't even pass legislation that their MAGA people would endorse because they want to embarrass Democrats and they want to take away, they want to have a, to embarrass Biden. So you can't deal with them on any route.
No, I mean, I think that what you see from my colleagues, I mean, I work with Marjorie Taylor Greene, I'm in committee with her. I have to look at her face in Homeland Security every single week. Their number one priority is to create chaos and destroy public service for the people. That's what they want to do. And then they want to blame it on Democrats, right? So I'm under no expectation or assumption that the Marjories of the world will ever actually do anything good for the people, because they want chaos and they want to be able to have I think she wants a reality show after she's done in Congress. I think that's her priority. But people are hurting right now. And Ben, I think just to your point that people are feeling what they're feeling in November, how they're feeling about this particular moment or our government, there is a distrust in our government for a number of reasons. But look, I want to dare to believe that the government can work for the people, and we have to actually give them something as a deliverable that they can say we have done. Transforming public housing in this country is a perfect example of that. I think the second piece of that I would say is my other bill, the Tenants' Right to Organize bill.
Yes.
Right now, you are seeing housing discrimination in ways you had not seen in decades. You're also seeing all of these developers and banks and investors buying up properties across the country to control and monopolize the market and set these high rents, right, that no one could afford. So the Tenants' Right to Organize bill actually is a bill that protects the rights of tenants to ensure that they have a future in housing. What does that mean? It allows for tenants in public housing units and low-income housing tax credit properties to organize, to form a union, to be able to give leaflets and leave leaflets under the door if tenants are having issues because the landlord, the developer is not fixing properties or is increasing rent without notice, and many of the things that you're hearing people talk about. And then the last part of that is it's also expanding protections to mixed status families who are not eligible for tenant-based rental assistance. In my district, Ben, I'm hearing horror stories of tenants. I'm hearing horror stories from organizations helping these tenants that are saying that the landlords are telling them you're in a month-to-month lease because you don't qualify for an annual lease. You and I both know that's illegal, but they're doing it. And then the tenant comes in and says, we have a rat infestation or the roof is caving in. Can you fix it? And they'll come back and say, we'll fix it, but that's actually going to require for me to increase your rent by $300 effective next month. Okay. You choose. And they're doing that because they think they can get away with it, and they're violating all sorts of housing housing and tenant right policy. But in some cases, it's because depending on the municipality, the protections are not there. This bill will expand protection for mixed status families.
Now, this is this particular bill would face resistance in the city of Chicago if it was introduced in the city council. There is no doubt in my mind.
That's right.
That Green New Deal bill, I think about the state of politics in the city of Chicago. Well, it would probably have, if Brandon Johnson were to propose it, someone would be against it, because that's just how the thing goes. You always, there's a few aldermen who would be against anything Brandon Johnson proposes. Brandon Johnson could call for more troops at the border and the impeachment of Mayorkas, and there would still be a few aldermen, I see Arelo, who would be against it for whatever reason. So how do you respond to people who would say, Delia, you're going too far. Allowing tenants to organize will destroy our free market system and destroy a landlord's rights as well. Go ahead.
I mean, these are the same elected officials that are probably slum landlords themselves and expect to have the best quality housing themselves. And if they're renters, I bet you they're calling their landlord when they see one little scratch on that wall. So it's hypocritical. If you believe that people should have accessible quality housing and that the housing that the government is putting money towards should be that, then you want to make sure that the tenants who are living in these units in your own districts, in your own wards, have the ability to organize so that the community, because it's really a loss for the community when these buildings are in such bad shape, when you have bad landlords. If you want to be able to make sure that you have the most sustainable, good, thriving community, then you want your tenants to be able to form unions. You want your tenants to be able to live in good quality housing. And certainly you're a hypocrite if you want to be able to have the best of the best, but people because of income status or because of subsidy don't deserve it. I call that racist.
And do you, again, and just to make sure, do you have a full Democratic support for this bill?
So this bill is building its co-sponsorships. I think so now we have Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, Congressman Jimmy Gomez out of California, Pressley's out of Massachusetts. We have Congresswoman Tlaib from Michigan. We have Congressman Kassar from Texas. We have Congresswoman Jayapal from Washington. So we're growing the list of co-sponsors. And over the next 2 weeks, we just introduced it a couple of months ago. But over the next few weeks, we're going to be adding more sponsors to the bill. And our hope is to be able to get at least the majority of the Progressive Caucus, which is about 100, assigned on to the bill as a priority. I mean, people, constituents are calling all of our offices about what's happening in their own property, subsidized or not. And I think the Tenants' Right to Organize Act will be a significant step towards housing justice.
All right. Very good. All right. I have my eye on the clock. I know your time is limited. So let's go through some of these recent votes you've had to make in Congress. But before I do, I just on a personal level, I don't think I've talked to you since you went to Congress. So what's that? Just really just on a personal level, we've got right down to business and we avoided the personal. You know, what has the adjustment been like? You're finding housing in Washington, mm-hmm. learning all the ins and the outs of being a congresswoman. You just learned you were a state rep in Springfield. So you just learned all the secret hallways in Springfield. Now you got to find them in Congress, meeting all the characters that you see on TV. And now your colleagues, AOC, mm-hmm. you mentioned, mm-hmm. Tlaib, you mentioned, Marjorie Taylor Greene. You mentioned just in a general sense, what's life been like for you as a congressman?
Look, I'd say roller coaster is probably the best example of it. First of all, it's the biggest honor of my life to represent Illinois 3. I also have a lot of pressure to be able to produce and deliver in a Congress that is extremely chaotic, divisive, and dysfunctional because of Speaker Johnson and the Republican leadership. So what I have found myself is trying to figure out what are the creative wins I could bring in, how to use my organizing experience in building relationships, how to partner with colleagues of mine that are in the Progressive Caucus and that are not in the Progressive Caucus. I last week was the guide to three of my colleagues to get to the caucus room. I guided people where I was lost for about a year trying to figure out how to get from one building to the other. So these are wins for me, especially because two of them have been there longer than I. I'm like, I'm going to show you how to get to the caucus room. So look, it's been emotional and it's been hard. And the foreign policy things have been really painful. It's been very painful to also see some of the division internally within Democrats, to also see some of the tensions around what is being said from one to the other, sometimes on Twitter, and feeling like you're not safe in certain spaces. It's been very challenging. But Ben, in a couple of days, I will be back in D.C. and fingers crossed, I will be bringing my very first bill to the House floor for a full debate and a vote. And this bill is a bipartisan bill. It's a bill that is going to restore GI Bill benefits for veterans, thousands of them that have been defrauded by for-profit schools. And this is a bill that has been in the making by previous members of Congress for many years. And I'll be able to be bringing that to a final full vote. It's passed full committee and subcommittee, and this crazy progressive that people call somehow figured out how to get bipartisan support. And in some cases, I will be passing more legislation that former Speaker McCarthy and a number of other colleagues in Congress have done in 20, 25 years, and proudly having done that in my first term. So I'm figuring out how to get things done. I have a really good team, and I'm building strong relationships.
Were you able to get a Republican co-sponsor on that bill?
Oh, yeah, a co-lead. A co-lead.
Amen. Okay.
A co-lead. Yeah. So, you know, by the name of Bost. Chairman Boss from downstate Illinois, who is the chairman of the Veteran Affairs Committee. So I got the chairman of the committee to co-lead it.
So let's just, ladies and gentlemen, to take a moment to point out Mike Boss, downstate Republican congressman, was reelected. He won the Republican primary by defeating Darren Bailey.
That's right.
In a very contentious race. Delia Ramirez, when she was elected to the state house, went down and was nice to Darren Bailey. Okay? Right.
You remember that. He gave me masks.
Yes. She was nice to Darren, but she was going to show, I'm going to show the world that I can deal with MAGA people. And she went down.
Ben, but don't go saying that. He's not, my boss might not want to be my co-lead anymore.
Mike, come on, chill out, dude. You won the election, okay? That's, you got right. Trump to endorse you, so.
That's right.
It's for the veterans. It's not about
that's
you.
That's right. That's but, right. You know, it's.
Although if Trump hears, gets wind of it, it doesn't want anything that would make Biden look good.
Listen, their orange Jesus makes a call and they respond to the call from their Jesus, from their orange Jesus.
You mentioned that not feeling like you're safe in certain spaces. What were you getting at when you said that?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm in the minority. We're in the minority and I'm a minority within the minority of the minority. I believe in shared humanity. And I also, every time I look at legislation, Ben, I ask myself, is this legislation going to unite us or divide us? Is this legislation going to get us closer to peace or closer to war? Is this legislation getting to the core problem or creating more problems? And it's meant that I've had to take some really difficult votes that I am proud of, but that are also very difficult in this moment. In a Congress where dissent, particularly around some foreign policy, is absolutely discouraged and in some cases feels like retaliation against you. You see the comments, you see the murmurs, you see the whispers. And I have other colleagues who say, I wish I could be as courageous as you are, but I can't be, right? So there are moments as a progressive Latina from Illinois representing the most progressive congressional district in the state of Illinois, that I do feel alone. And I'm reminded of who I represent and my values. And I, even when I say shared humanity, how some folks will weaponize even that. So there's been moments where I have felt that some colleagues can say these Democrats are the cancer of the party, right? Referring to me and referring to AOC, referring to Presley or to Tlaib or Bush, or colleagues of mine from my same party saying that we're despicable or soulless. And I don't see consequences to that language, but I don't use that language to refer to them because I see their humanity before I see even their votes.
Hmm. And do they say this publicly? Do they say it to your face?
That would be better. They say it on Twitter.
Oh, Twitter. Everybody get off Twitter, okay? I'm going to lower it. I used to say no one who's over the age of 55 should be allowed to be on Twitter, Delia. But now, you know what? 20 is the cutoff. You guys,
listen, get off Twitter. Get off X. X, right? It's X, though.
I mean, just the level of trash talking, it just encourages. It's a sort of mindlessness after a while.
And look, Ben, I've had death threats, right? And not by my colleagues, no, not at all. But I'm saying, like, you know, I have interns of mine who, for the very first time, are working for a government office. In many cases, no one in their family had ever known what it was like to be in the U.S. Capitol. These are young people that are picking up the phone and hearing people say and describe how they're going to hurt me and hurt them. Mm-hmm. I've had my chief of staff find interns in a ball crying in a little corner for the things that were said to them, but especially to the women, right? And the men get it too. The guys, actually, my guy interns, the way that they talk about violence to them is different from the way that they talk to women. But I am living in a moment where the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world, right? And some of this very right-wing reporting and trolls online are weaponizing every single moment and putting my own life at risk because they want to call me the Hamas squad, because they want to misrepresent a vote, because I want to choose peace over war, so then they believe that I don't deserve to be there and that I should be hurt. Mm-hmm. It's shameful. And that rhetoric is the kind of rhetoric that you are seeing all around the country, as you see a rise in anti-Semitism and a rise in Islamophobia and a rise in anti-immigrant hate. It's despicable. I guess I'll use the word that my colleague used on us to see that, because also I'm still a human being. I'm still the daughter of Maria and Luis Ramirez, their little girl who is trying to fight for a better world. But I'm getting death threats, so I have to get escorted at airports. That's the reality of this moment.
Mm. Yeah, and it's being triggered by new things every day. All right, let's talk about a couple of these votes that sort of illustrate what you're getting at. I have a whole list of them, but I'll, again, with the eye toward the clock, I'll reduce it to, we'll start with the vote on Ukrainian aid, mm-hmm. aid to Ukraine. You voted yes on that. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, look, since September, I have been saying we need to send aid to Ukraine. We need to support them, and we need to do everything we can to protect them from a tyrant like Putin. And it was tied up and coupled, right, with aid to Netanyahu, because really, to me, this was unconditional support to Netanyahu, and also HR2, which is the most anti-immigrant border bill this country has ever seen. All of this was tied together in a supplemental bill that was going to come to the House. And I had said then, and I said for a long time, let's decouple. Stop playing games with Ukrainian people by adding poison pills that many of us can't vote for, because we want to protect life. That's where we want to send this aid to Ukraine. We don't want to see more lives get lost as a result of it. So I voted proudly. I was one of the very first people to run to vote when the Ukraine aid came up on the board. And I'm grateful that the Senate is also getting that done this week, or has gotten it done this week. But, you know, a lot of people kept putting pressure on a discharge petition that on one side gave aid to the people of Ukraine, and on the other side would kill more children in Gaza. And I just couldn't sign that petition.
All right. So that's the second vote, the vote for weapons for Israel. And you voted no on that. Go into a little more explanation.
I mean, look, I believe that Netanyahu wants to provoke Iran to solidify support for his war. I'm just going to say it. And when I think about where we are today, and I think about what I said 6 months ago, there is no way you get to de-escalation. There is no way you prevent a regional war. There is no way you save hostages and save innocent lives in Gaza if you continue to give unconditional aid to another tyrant, Netanyahu, and his obsession with destroying Gaza. I voted no, and just days later, they went into Rafah and killed 18 children, Ben. How do we sleep at night knowing that we, this government, is sending billions of dollars to kill children? And the other part of that, Ben, is like, you know, people say, what about the hostages? If you care about the hostages, like I care about the hostages, you don't want the hostages to get bombed. You don't want the hostages to be starved to death. You don't want to see another child die as a result of this conflict. What we just did was to further inflame the possibility of a regional war that we will get dragged into as a result of.
Do you have conversations, just private? You mentioned the private conversations you'd had with Republicans on the housing bills, where there's a level of honesty, and the Republicans tell you, you know, I kind of want to vote for your bill. It'll mean the end of my career. I'm not certain, and so forth. Do you have that level of honest private conversations with your
Republicans? Moments?
Well, no, Democrats who support who supported the Israeli
Look, we have a ceasefire resolution that I think about 19 or 20 of us are officially signed on to. I've co-led it. And people have called me all sorts of names, including in our own state, including my own former state colleagues, I know. But for those that know me, they know that I'm always going to choose peace over war. And for those that don't know, I have been to that region. I've been to Gaza, I've been to the West Bank, and I've been to Israel. And I went way before I was an elected official, so I got to see all of it. I know what occupation looks like. I've seen it. And I also know what it looks, what it feels like for just 2 weeks to be confused with being Palestinian and how I was treated there, right? So as I think about the conversations that I've had with some of my colleagues, over 66 of them have issued their own statements for a ceasefire. Becca Ballant, a Jewish progressive leader from Vermont, was one of two Jewish people, Jewish members, who voted against this aid to Israel. And it was painful to watch on that House floor what that physical manifestation of that moment, right, meant, because the complexities of being Jewish and having family there, and also saying, I am someone that believes and chooses to believe in a moment of peace and not one more dollar to bombs. It was really hard to see some of my other colleagues who, you know, I think that they were wrestling with it and trying to figure out. I mean, there were people that were standing by the board until the very last second, trying to see, could I vote no? And ended up voting yes. So there's been a lot of conversations with a number of colleagues who I know that feel conflicted. And they're also afraid of the consequences of this moment, right? You have AIPAC, who is targeting left and right, courageous members of Congress who don't want to see more people die. And in some cases, they're going to spend $20, $30 million. And they're trying to show an example in Summer Lee, for example, although I know they say they're not spending money there, but today Summer Lee is in an election in Pittsburgh. They're going to come for Cori Bush and Jamal Bowman, and they're trying to say to the others, right, to other progressive members that have not actually voted this way with us, if you dare to do that, we'll do what we're doing to Cori and Jamal, and you will lose. Mm. It's really devastating.
When you said could have voted no, but ended up voting yes. Just help listeners understand sort of the legislative maneuvering that you were getting at there.
Yeah, so this was the bill. So we had standalone bills for Ukraine, for Taiwan, and then this sidecar of legislation that included banning TikTok, which, by the way, I voted against as well.
We'll get into
all
that.
All sorts of other things. Okay. And then there was the $26 billion a bill that included $14 billion specifically to Netanyahu with no conditions whatsoever. The vote was, do you want to send $14 billion? Or are you saying, no, don't send $14 billion to Netanyahu? There were a number of my colleagues who, I believe, found it really difficult, and who I care deeply about and who I know feel very conflicted, who would have wanted to vote no and could not get themselves to a no and voted yes. Colleagues of mine that are in leadership that have to think about their own leadership of futures in Congress, right? But I also sat next to Rashida Tlaib, who has family in the West Bank, who has family in Gaza. As she watched her own colleagues, as she has cried with, laughed with, negotiated bills with, vote, in essence, to send unconditional money to a man who wants to kill her own family. That was hard. And at the end of that vote, there were claps, mostly from our side. And it was so hard to look at people's faces. Both Raskin, Jamie Raskin, a Jewish member of Congress, and Rashida Tlaib, as they hugged each other and cried. Because we are going to wake up, not 5 years from now, think a year from now, and ask ourselves, where did I stand in this precise moment? And if you truly believe in the liberation and safety of Israeli and Palestinian lives, then we have to do everything we can to de-escalate the situation. Sending that money will not de-escalate. It will only get us closer to a regional war.
Well put, Delia. All right, let's move on to the TikTok bill. a little levity in contrast to the issue you just talked about. I mean, it's sort of madness, a proposed ban on TikTok. I've heard so many people articulate so many reasons as to why the ban is going down. I could dedicate an entire show to it. And I've not yet, Delia, but I probably will get around to it. I watched this from afar, just shaking my head in disbelief, the different machinations, the different ways, like the Marjorie Taylor Greens have camped out a position on it. Politicians in Montana have camped out a position on it. Some of my lefty friends have camped out positions on it. I just sort of smile in disbelief. Anyway, you had to put a vote down. Mm-hmm. So how did you vote on it and why? Go ahead.
I voted no. I mean, look, the sidecar, what we call the sidecar legislation, literally they just threw a bunch of different bills into one bill and figured, let's just throw them all together. Some good in there, some really terrible, but people are going to have to choose yes or no, and hopefully they'll choose yes. And actually, the majority chose yes. I voted no. I mean, and think about it. First of all, there are security issues we need to address. That is without a doubt. We are seeing fraud, consumer fraud, left and right. If it's not coming through Instagram, Facebook, certainly there's issues with TikTok. Where is your information? Who is it being shared with? All of that is concerns that certainly we all should be addressing. Banning TikTok is not going to do it. And really, the reasons why they want to ban TikTok even more so is not going to do it. So when I think about the number of small businesses that are dependent, especially post-pandemic, on TikTok, and that we're about to ban it in the United States because now it's going to the Senate, it's ridiculous to me that that is the stuff that we're prioritizing. People are saying, forget TikTok. Well, how about funding affordable housing? How about making it easier for me to go to the doctor? How about having neighborhood schools that are fully funded? How about I can buy a darn home in my city if I wanted to? But here you are. That censures, impeachments, and banning TikTok. That's what we prioritize.
Yeah. Well, good for you on that no vote. All right. I will close with Mike Johnson. Democrats are going to have to make a decision, maybe. I don't know if Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to follow through on her threat, as to whether to support Mike Johnson, keep him on a speaker, or to do what they did with Kevin McCarthy and allow him to be defeated by his own caucus. What's your position on this?
My position is that Mike Johnson put himself in this position. Mike Johnson should figure out how to get out of it. Why are Democrats coming to bail Republicans when, and because we keep doing it. We've done it with a number of pieces of legislation. The last appropriations bill, he got some bad stuff in there, but we have to deliver for him. Look, I don't see a world where I would be supporting Mike Johnson, an election denier, someone who is absolutely anti-choice, someone who hates people like my husband, who's a dreamer and who is doing everything possible to criminalize people seeking asylum, and someone, quite frankly, who's evil in many ways. Is he willing to work more with Democrats than perhaps McCarthy, because McCarthy may have lied a lot? Yes. But I think that if our leadership, Hakeem Jeffries, is going to negotiate any way of saving Mike Johnson, there are ample votes from other folks, and it should not be from progressive members. That's what I say.
It ain't me. get some more of those conservative Democrats. Get Quigley to vote for him. How about that? All right, my old friend Mike Quigley, who district I believe is just, let me do this now, I gotta see the map, just north of yours, am I correct?
That's right.
Yeah, get Quigley to vote for Johnson. All right. All right, Delia, thank you so much. Anything you want to add before I let you go?
Ben, I enjoy our conversations. I was sent to Congress to work, and I hope that my constituents see that I'm creating working groups for housing. I'm introducing legislation. I'm about to pass legislation that I brought $14.1 million, which for the record is significantly more than some of other colleagues who've been in office for much longer. Because I feel like it's like the Hamilton song, right? We're running out of time and I need to make sure that we do as much as possible, because the truth is that constituents, what they tell me on doors, I'm sick and tired of promises. It doesn't matter which party. How about you start delivering? And I want to show them that I represent the Democratic part that gets things done and won't stop until it's done.
All right. Very good. Congresswoman Delia Ramirez, thank you very much for coming on the show. Appreciate it. Let's not let that much time lapse between appearances. All right.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, very good. That's Delia Ramirez. Also want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job. Hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And as always, you can catch up on previous Ben Jarofsky shows, get Benny J bonus interviews, read columns from Ben, sign up for the Reader newsletter, and so much more, all at chicagoreader.com. You can follow Ben on Instagram. It's easy, at Benny J Show. And don't forget to tell your friends, like, subscribe, and follow The Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.